It's 3:30, it's half past the hour. Can I get everyone reseated and ready for the next session, please? Counselors and others in the room, if I could encourage you to either be seated or continue your conversations more gently at the back of the room. We need to commence the next session. Right. So our session now at 3:30 local time is a number of issues within the area of IDNs. So if I could ask that we start the recording, if we haven't already, great. So we're rolling. And I think I'm going to hand over to Ching right away to kick us off and welcome his co-presenters to join us here. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Jonathan. And thanks... Thanks, Francisco and Steve, for joining us. And Nala, I'm sorry. Hi, Nala. So today we're pretty much, I think it's the right time and right place to talk about, to address the IDN issues. Today we're in Beijing, and I'm just helping to facilitate the dialogue, the conversation here. So we aim to set this up as a more interactive session. So two topics here, as you can see on the screens, we have 45 minutes for VIP, the variant program, and 15 minutes for the IRD. Staff here will provide the brief updates on each issue. We had some good discussion on the mailing list in the past few weeks. I put together some discussion points, as you can see here. Before I hand over to staff, I would like to make a very relatively brief remarks here. So in this room, I can see many familiar faces here. There are many pioneers. Many inventors, entrepreneurs, for the past 14-15 years or so, they spend their energy and efforts individually or collectively on the IDN development, from the IDNA, from the guidelines, from the browser plugins. And then later, we have this IDN CCTLD fast track, which ran faster than the GTLDs and is still ongoing. So this is 2013 now. We are looking at a full realization of IDN. This is very historical, and this is the last mile for our work here. So as I mentioned last time in Toronto, let's just do it right. We know some applications, they are eager to get delegation with particular one apply for string. Some prefer actually to have a synchronized delegation as the IDN CCTLD did, in which that is so far the best practice and recognized by the technical and also the ICANN community. So I hope today the applicant and also the staff, we can build some mutual understanding here on the principle of the variant delegation blocking, variant TLD string fees, per domain transaction fees, which we'll be talking, or actually we'll be discussing that later. It is certainly not and cannot be a one-way street here. Of course, those discussion on the IDN delegation, the variant delegation has to make some sense from the user experience, from the security and public interest perspective. So with that, let me maybe pass to friend Francesco and then open up for discussion and question. Thank you.
Thank you, Jin. So I would like to give a brief update on the IDN variant TLD program. I don't have any slides, it's just 5 minutes talk. We have a more detailed briefing that is scheduled this week on Wednesday. I believe it's at 1:30 p.m. in case you are interested. So briefly, the IDN variant TLD program, it's just finalized the tier phase of the program. Last month, we published a couple of documents. The first one, what is called the IDN Rudel GR procedure. It's a procedure to develop what you may call the IDN tables for the root, that is defining the set of characters that will be allowed for IDN registrations in the root, identifying the variants, if any, of those code points, and the disposition that those variants will be allowed, meaning, for example, if a variant will be a block, meaning nobody can have it, or if it can be actually allocated and active in the DNS. That is one of the documents. The other document is a report on a user experience study related to variant TLDs. That report contains a series of recommendations about what should be done to ensure a good user experience in relation to IDN variant TLDs. So there is a next phase that is planned for this program that is focused on developing, for example, from those recommendations in the user experience study, develop things like modifications to the applicant guidebook or contracts or IDN guidelines in order to address the issues related to IDN variant TLDs. There is also the plan to implement this Rudel GR procedure to start populating this table that I mentioned before. So those are the next steps related to the IDN variant TLD program. Thank you.
Thanks. So with that, I see hand here. So Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. I have a question from a remote participant from Andy G. Has a question. Does the VIP program include issues relating to VeriSign's upcoming .com/.net variants? There are, for example, 30,000 Cyrillic IDNs presently registered and operational in a .com that are expecting to be seamlessly moved over to the new .com variant when it goes live. Although VeriSign mentioned these registrations in their .com application, there doesn't seem to be provisions in ICANN's standard contract to allow for this grandfathering to happen. All told, there are nearly 700,000 current registrations in IDN.com expecting to be grandfathered into their non-ASCII equivalents. The same grandfathering concerns exist with Afilias.info variants and PIRs.org variants.
Hello. Okay. Francisco here. So variants are not, according to the applicant guidebook, they are not to be delegated just yet. There is a board resolution in 2010 that clearly states that variants cannot be delegated, IDN variant TLDs cannot be delegated until the solutions are put in place, and that's the solutions that the variant TLD program is building. I don't think I can comment on specific cases like the one mentioned before, but what I can say is that there is, in any of the work of the variant TLD program, there is no consideration to have something like variance between ASCII and IDNs. The consideration has been always to be about purely IDN variant TLDs. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say that question is more about transliterations than it's not about variance. So I don't think it's really subject to this.
Actually, I would prefer that, and that we don't go to a specific existing TLD case. I mean, as an example, I'd like to stick with the discussion points here. First one is discussion on the user experience, public interest, operational readiness, security concerns, etc. This question actually, this is for staff and also for the applicants or from the communities, that do we still need, or are there still any remaining concerns in terms of, let's say, securities or any user experience that we as a registry or we as a registrar, we will have some expectation in terms of the IDN variant. I'm not sure how should I point it to, but maybe staff or some others in the floor would like to address or make some statement on that. Okay. Yes, Edmund. Just go to the nearest.
So, this is Edmund speaking. I'm in terms of the, I guess, related to the user experience report as well, and what Jing just mentioned in terms of security and stability and sort of how we view this. One particular conclusion from the user experience study is kind of interesting, I guess, you know, in terms of the variant, the importance of the IDN variants, and of course the LGR process takes us down the road in terms of the IDN variant TLD being eventually in the root. The question here, I don't know whether I have jumped the topics, but I think one of the most important aspect is when we work on the actual implementation of IDN variants, how does the team view in terms of the agreement, registry agreement, whether there needs to be changes, you know, to handle IDN variant TLDs, since we are looking down that path, and also, you know, whether you know, there are a few provisions like the escrow requirements, like the TLD itself, and of course also fees and how that would work. That there seems to be still quite a bit of work there, but some of this might have to be fast forwarded as we start signing agreements with new GTLD applicants who went through the process. That even though we're not allocating it just yet, some provisions might need to be in place. I'm just curious whether the team has thought about those issues.
So Francisco here. So yes, part of the program and one of the projects in the next phase is precisely to go into the recommendations from the user experience study and develop any changes that are needed in the register agreement. Whether I believe there will be changes or not, I think it's most likely yes. For example, there is one recommendation that comes to mind. They need to have the two TLDs to be considered together, to be managed together, and something like that, you will need to put it in the contract, I believe.
Jeff.
One of the fee issue at least second level registrations and variants, and I realize that registries can offer different solutions of how they deal with variants. One of the things that we do, that Neustar does for its applicants, will be a bundling function, right? So if you register, and I'm not the expert at this, so I may not be saying this exactly right, but if you register a second level name, an IDN name that's got variants, we will automatically bundle them together so that you could not separate the registration. So once you register one, you then block the variants out. And one of the things I'd like to see added to the agreement is that is treated the same way as the new provision, which is blocking even though that applies to blocking registrations for abuse or malware. I'd like to see the same type of thing here where if we block them and they can't be used separate and apart from the original, that there's no extra fees, so it just counts as one registration. So that's something that's something I'd like to see in the agreements if you do that bundling function. And I know I will say just as a there's been a lot of confusion and a lot of questions from evaluators on variants in the new TLD program, and follow-up questions. And I don't even and it depends which evaluator you get. I'm not 100% convinced that the evaluators necessarily fully understand the variant issue with some of the questions that we've gotten over and over again. So I do think that that is something that needs to be worked out with on the fee issue especially. And I'm trying to think of what other issues would be contractually related. I think you said data escrow is another one. How would that be impact? I mean, it just needs to be escrowed together, or yeah, okay.
Okay. Yoel.
Yeah. So, just before I get to the point, I want to say, Jeff, just to understand, you said that this is Neustar's policy to bundle the variants in the second level.
It's Neustar and one that we're implementing with. It's like the base of what we're implementing as a back end for all of our TLDs. I mean, sure. nobody's come to us and said that that's not the way we'd like to see it. In fact, and it's what. By the way, we support registrations in CN and TW, and it's what we do there. So
So first of all, I want to stress out that this is an issue that I think it's a policy issue that no one in ICANN has actually attended. What do you do? Is this so? You decided. I think it's the right decision, by the way. But this is your. What happens with other registries? Now, clearly, this is important for the user experience and for security issues to do that. There's another problem. Not all languages have variant tables ready, as we know. We had this whole process, but this process is regarding IDN TLDs, not second level. I was in the committee and I talked about that it's important that we kind of take this to the second level also. And I've sent an email in the list asking on a point that I would really like to hear from Fadi, is what happens on the TMCH? What are they going to do? No one talked about that. So if there's an IDN trademark, so do they get the variants automatically? Now, just to give you an example, we still don't have a variant table for Hebrew. So we're going to work on it, but it's I kind of volunteered to do that, but it's no one did that. So now this is just happening. So I'm just saying, and it comes to points that we've talked before. I think we're not ready. I think there's some issues. How can you implement TMCH without resolving these issues before? So just my 2 cents.
Thanks for actually bringing us back to the topics. I know we jumped directly to the third one, the contractual language. But thanks, Yoav. Actually, it seems that the operational readiness is one particular concern for the applicant, and also for the registry who's the IDN registry who's gear up for the. For the launch and also the trademark clearinghouse interaction. This is purely unknown to many of us in the room. So I know Holmes coming first. Francesco, would you like to respond on that particular?
So just quickly, I happen to be involved in the clearinghouse, so I think I know the answer to your question. There are no provisions in the applicant guidebook regarding variants of trademarks, and that's very clear. The trademark section of the applicant guidebook says that only exact matches, and exact match is really a definition, is not really exact match in the English sense. But anyway, variants are not considered as part of the trademarks registered in the trademark clearinghouse. Having said that, the registries that are using the clearing house can implement their variants according to their policy, and they can offer variants of the registrations related to the registrations in the clearing house. So what I'm trying to say, if you are, for example, doing doing claims and you have your registration, probably claims is not the best example, Sunrise. You come with your token, the what is called SMD, and request the registration of a string that is related to a trademark, then you will not get immediately the variant, because Sunrise is limited to only what is there in the SMD, and there are no variants there. However, the registry could offer to you a registration of a variant immediately after the Sunrise period related to that registration.
Yeah, that, sorry, I have to respond. This is, of course, it's clear that that's happened, that can happen, but I think you can understand that this was not the point of the TMCH. The point of TMCH is brand protection, is protecting brands and allowing them to protect the trademark. If a trademark owner pays a few hundred dollars for one registration in the trademark clearing house, and then just for because that specific language has maybe that, you know, word can have 6, 7, sometimes even more variants, then needs to go to register them separately, and they might be taken by someone else, or maybe they need to apply in Sunrise through other type of claims. I don't know what this is a mess. Okay, this is a mess for brands, for brand owners. This is clearly something that has to be resolved before we implement TMCH. I don't think it's a good idea that this will go forward without resolving variants. The good policy, from my point of view, is just that, like a new store does, that variants will be bundled. But this has to be decided some way. Okay? And that's what I'm saying.
I have Home and then Zahid.
Okay, I have my own comments on the variance issue, but I want to go to the TMCH first. As a law professor and trademark lawyer here based in Beijing, I do have a serious concern about the capacity and expertise of the current delegated TMCH to handle the trademarks in IDN scripts. Well, just now the colleague raised a very interesting and a valid question. Can they really recognize these variants as the one trademark, not separate as two? Otherwise, it seems TMCH is missing its whole purpose. That it failed the purpose to protect trademark owners. As a trademark owner, we have to submit twice, which is back to Chinese IDN characters. We have simplified version and traditional version, and they're being used concurrently. Not only in mainland, but also in Hong Kong, in Taiwan, in Macau. So how to handle that? It means I submit one version of Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola, in simplified character, and I have to pay for second time for the Coca-Cola in traditional character. This is really ridiculous. They have to be connected in some way, but there's no policy here, so we do need to have policy and development very quickly. Let's go to the second point. I read the report from the YP team about the user experience. I guess it's very much moving to the right direction, especially you kindly think about the possibility of the delegation of variance TLD. Oh, this is the great leap, to my understanding. But it seems that you still think about a long timeline. The time is critical here. We don't have time. You think about the possibility in 2014, if my memory is correct. But thanks to ICANN's IDN going first policy, the first batch of TLDs will be delegated, will be IDNs. They'll all be IDNs. And they will be delegated, and hopefully it's true, it's June 2013. So is a gap between these processes. Then how to handle that? I'm thinking about one solution. Maybe I'm naive, but that's something that's pretty innovative in ICANN policy. I can ask all the TLD to submit public interest commitment. So my question here is that for all the IDN relevant TLD applicants, should they submit a kind of public interest commitment that they will observe or respect IDN variance tables if it's applicable to their domain. This is not only for top level, but also for the second level. I guess VRP team is not limited to top level. It's also addressed the second level and subsequent levels. So, okay, my two comments. Thanks.
Thank you, Hong. Yeah, the timeline issue, I mean, so let me jump in here quickly before I give it to the timeline issues, we've talked about this in our call previously, and I mentioned to you that this will be brought up, is that the VIP work, the timeline, basically, it's been known to us, and or I have been led to know that the variant delegation will not be ready until next year, which to some people in the room, they may not find this acceptable simply because of various implementation or the operational issues here. I mean, or just being brought up. So, let me stop here. I mean, I have skipped many people. Then Zahid, you have.
Yeah. Thank you. This was an interesting discussion, and it sort of opens up a really much larger can of worms when it comes to trademark issues, because I think what we were dealing with in the ASCII space was limited, and I don't know how much debate that sort of generated. When we get into IDNs, I mean, there's a whole different ball game. And to be perfectly honest, I hadn't actually, you know, thought about it that much. So thank you. Surprisingly, we both agree, huh? Excellent. So on the trademark issues about visual similarity, and I don't have to explain why, obviously, this is such an issue to my colleague on my left as well from China. So I think the word kitab, whether it's in Persian or Arabic, will look the same. Or it's in Sindhi, will look exactly the same. And so if we allow people to... you know, basically get protection for sunrise under one of them and not the other, then that's a very easy workaround for phishing and for many other things. And just wanted to stress the point that this is not just about trademark protection and brand protection and for brand holders protection, but it's also a protection of, number one, the consumers, so that they know who they're dealing with. So it's basically consumer protection, which is pretty much the mandate of under the AOC. And the second is also protecting the registrants, because there will be a claims notice that'll go out. And so, you know, it's also, they don't make a bad decision. So all, you know, it's not just one vested interest that's being protected here. Thanks.
Thank you. This is Edmund speaking. So I guess following with the conversation, really wanted to go back to the team, I guess both the LGR and the user experience. With the current findings, especially on the user experience one, in terms of the importance of variants, do you think, you know, would you recommend the new GTLD team that we are ready for, you know, the TMCH as mentioned, and also, you know, with the understanding that IDN variance is so important, do you think we're ready with the delegation of IDN TLDs without variance? Would that cause a security concern given the user experience study? Because, you know, there are clear indications that variants are needed in certain cases, and without which we are threatening the security and stability of the implementation overall. So that's one particular item. And then just a point of clarification. Sorry, I jumped, Chinga, sorry I jumped to number three, but I come back to number one. A point of clarification on the user experience study. I just want to make sure that in section 6.2.1, you are not suggesting something that is incompliant with CDNC, the Chinese Domain Name Consortium policies, and the RFC 3743 in terms of preferred variants. So I just want to make sure, clarify that. I'm guessing it isn't, because in the document you have extensive description of how useful that feature is, but I just want a clarification on that. So are we ready? Would you recommend, you know, a new GTLD team to go forward? And the clarification on 6.2.
Oh, I want to I want to have a quick response to my colleagues about the IDN and trademarks. It seems a very interesting topic. To respond to your question about variance with regard to TMCH, I can put it this way. TMCH is nothing about confusing similarity. There's no similarity issues here. For TMCH, the data of trademarks submitted there should be identical match. But here the issue is there's no policy on variance. So make the something really ridiculous. To use example of Chinese, the simplified version, traditional version, represent one trademark, but they don't look like similar. They're not similar, but they are the same. They are identical. But because you don't have the policy, so they cannot be recognized as the same and cannot be recognized as one. So think about it. If they recognize as two records, there will be serious public confusion effects. And let me remind you, trademark protection is not only for the protection of private interests of trademark holders. This protects the public interest to avoid the public confusion. I guess this involves the public interest here. So I have very serious concern about the capacity and expertise of the TMCH delegated so far to handle the IDN variance issues.
Thanks, Hong. Let me briefly perhaps take a quick example of the how the variant works here. Basically, if you take the English, I mean many of you have used this experience, this example before, so let me take that from some of you, is that if you look at the English characters, it is very similar to for the Chinese case. It's just like the capital letter, when it's being put in the domain name system, you always see the same resolution as for those lowercase characters. So it always leads to the same destination. So basically, what I can understand and appreciate the argument here is that, fortunately, in the English ASCII world, the capital letter and the lowercase, that's being resolved. That's done technically, businessly, but for the Chinese and for other languages, that part is missing. Jeff.
So I guess my question is, let's take Chinese as an example. So there have been at least a delegation of a Chinese top-level name, right, that matches the country code. So before we leave everyone in this room with some kind of feeling like we're just completely not ready, let me ask, what were the problems for trademark owners in the launch of that one? Was it huge? Was it something that we need to stop the whole program for? Is there data out there? So maybe Edmund can answer that.
Edmund, or do we have anyone runs .china?
No? I think that's a very good point that Jeff's just raised. But with the implementation of both .China and .Taiwan, both of them had IDN TLD variants, and also both of them handled IDN variants with the Sunrise and the launch. And that's the difference. Right now we can't, because of the policy of the new GTLD process, which is not in the hands of the registry. The community is ready. The policy at ICANN is not. That I think is our point from our side and Hong's.
Jonathan,
just got a question. I mean, you guys are talking all about, it's Jonathan Robinson, but you're talking about policy, Hong in particular, and now Edmund. I want to be clear, because from my point of view, that this is really about implementation at the coalface. This is a decision of, you know, the decision is to put trademarks in the clearinghouse, exact match only. The execution of that is really then, of all the clear things to my mind, this is a clear issue of implementation. As Jeff said, at the registry he's working with, they've made that implementation decision to execute in a certain way. So I'm just a little concerned that we keep saying this is a policy issue, when the policy seems, for once in this case, to be clear. It's actually really about how it's the technical execution of it. So if we could clarify that, I think that would be helpful.
I think the issue is that we can handle it at the registry, but what they're saying is that at the clearinghouse, if they don't recognize the variant, there's no way that the registry will grant that registration during a sunrise. So unless it exactly matches what's in the clearinghouse, we won't grant it during a sunrise. So let's say a trademark owner tries to register their variant during a sunrise. We would say, no, we don't know that. They'd have to register the right one in order for us to bundle. I don't know if that makes sense. You're looking confused.
Thomas.
Sorry.
Thomas.
You know, let me see if I can help clarify a little bit. I don't have all the answers. I don't necessarily am an expert in this space. But one way to sort of, you know, if you want to talk about implementation versus policy, on the clearinghouse side, one way to look at it is suppose that you have a name and there's one variant for it. So there's really two different strings that are, from a trademark protection perspective, should be treated the same. From a technical perspective, you could put both of them in the clearinghouse. When the registrar, you know, pops up the name and says, is this the one you want to purchase, they can query the clearinghouse twice and get a match. And technically, that can work. Okay? So you can say maybe there isn't a problem. On the other hand, if you are registering the trademark in clearinghouse, presumably the policy that's in place now is you do one registration and there's a fee associated with that. Now, if you want to register a variant, does that mean you have to pay twice? Does it, you know... So, and is that an implementation question? Is that a policy question? I'm not sure I know the answer, but it's clearly a question that has not been resolved. So I think that's an example of an area where there's a gap.
So what we're going to try to do is just... My friend on my left is also going to try to sort of dovetail into this. I think the issue is, and in response to the issue of .cn in Chinese IDNs, my understanding is that .cn has a policy on variants, but ICANN doesn't. And so to responding to Jonathan's point, the thing is, it's not an implementation issue. It's that ICANN doesn't have in its policy for GTL, the new GTLDs, a policy regarding variants and how it's supposed to be dealt with. And absolutely, it's a cost issue as well. So that's, I think, what the issue is. And so there needs to be development of a policy within the new GTLD that would apply to what happens in this space.
I think Zahid is very right. With respect to the IDN CCTLDs, many people say that why don't we learn the practice of IDN CCTLD variants management and make it apply to IDN GTLD variants. The problem is that there is actually no policy on IDN CCTLD variants. They're only practices and very much by ad hoc. There are a few, variants IDN CCTLD have been delegated, but they are not labeled as variant CCTLDs for China. It's .China is simplifying .China in traditional, but they are delegated as two TLDs. No, that's one. That's very interesting part. And let's go back to Zahid's point. What was variants is being addressed is actually as a territorial level. It's within .CN. In .cn's registration policy, they actually link up the two versions of this language script. So this is actually the CNX submission for management of variants. It should be managed through registration policy and subject to each TLD to decide whether they link up. But they should use the same variance table whenever it's applicable. So the problem is that it's territorial policy, but it's no universal policy that I can.
Okay, I have Milton, J. Scott, Yoav, and Alan. So anyone else would like to? So Edmund, and then we will cut off at. So Milton.
I just have a question, a point of information. When you register a trademark, do you create a separate registration for let's say simplified and traditional Chinese characters, or do you automatically get the trademark in both cases?
Well, thanks for Tim's question. Well, probably I can comment from the experience of the Chinese communities, the trademark office policy in mainland Hong Kong, Taiwan, and Hong Kong. They're actually no policy on variants per se. However, thanks to the trademark law's design, a trademark cannot be registered if it's confusingly similar to the pre-existing registration. So actually, this is for the any third parties, there's no way to register a traditional form of a Chinese trademark if the simplified form has been registered. So that's the practices so far. I do see some problem occurs, actually. In mainland, people registered a simplified version, say, .home, and someone in Hong Kong, they registered the traditional version in Hong Kong's special administrative region. It's happened in two jurisdictions. But since the close partnership agreement has been signed between the two jurisdictions, this issue has been resolved. So these two records, the conflicting one, should be settled. One should be cancelled if it involves cyber squatting or trademark squatting. Did I answer your question?
Thanks. Surprisingly, the discussion has been led to trademark issues. We were hoping that, but since that this is also something that's on our radar, so let's just keep move on. And since we have time, so Jay Scott.
Okay, and this is J. Scott Evans from Yahoo and a member of the IRT. So first, to Milton's question, it depends on the jurisdiction. There are some jurisdictions that will allow you to register a list of variants of particular marks in different stylized formats and different languages, as long as it all has the same meaning. It's jurisdiction to jurisdiction. So in some, it can be done. It appears that in China, it is a matter of policy that it's done through the office examination where they make that determination. With regards to the trademark clearinghouse, you can't be in the clearinghouse unless you have a registration for the term. Okay? So you can't be registered in the trademark clearinghouse to indicate anything unless you have a registration. So for Yahoo, we have a Chinese character mark that is a transliteration that when spoken sounds like Yahoo, but actually means glorious tiger. Okay? Which I agree with.
That's a graceful tiger.
Next, with regards to Lyman's question and the answer about technical, it's already built into the system because for M, ampersand M, for Mars, the candies that we all enjoy, they can choose various because ampersand can be shown in different ways. It can be M-A-N-D-M. It can be M space underscore A-N-D underscore M. And so they have, for one price, they get to choose M and M and then 10 variants. So the technology is already in there. And with if the straw man proposal should go through, the same technology was going to be used for Yahoo and Yahoo with two zeros if we can show that it qualifies as one we've gotten a decision showing that it was an abusive registration in the past, and we would get up to 50 variants under that proposal. So the technology already exists within that. As for a policy, if a registry like .asia wants to offer something above the floor of what's being mandated by ICANN, they certainly can offer greater protections and use that technology to deliver it. That's it.
Thank you. Would you like to respond? Okay.
That's actually an absolutely sort of vital issue that does involve, but that's similar to sometimes in ASCII as well. But what we're talking about is variants are slightly different. We're talking about a character that looks exactly the same. I know the zero and the O's may be a good example for that, but the issue we're trying to tackle is actually is analogous, but different.
Thanks, Dai. Yoav.
Yeah. What I just to add, whether it's a policy or implementation, I must tell you, I'm not sure. I think there are smaller issues, not as important issues that were treated as policy, and maybe other issues that I've seen recently, and I don't really like being treated as implementation. So I don't know what is policy and what is implementation in this case, but. Anyway, it doesn't end in the TMCH. I think that this is why I think it's some kind of a policy because we need someone to decide. It can be the GNSM, it can be the board or anyone. Okay, someone needs to decide and say if you register an IDN name, then all the bundle, all the variants of that name in the second level should be bundled. Okay? Not not to have Neustar decide to do it. It's great Neustar did that. Okay, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's great. But we should make sure that it happens in all, what we have, 150 and something, 160 other registries. So that's what I'm saying. Whether you regard this as an implementation or policy, something needs to happen.
Alan.
Thank you. Just a quick comment, and it's not dissimilar from the last one. In response to Jonathan before of whether this is implementation or policy, I think we're getting caught up in words. The Trademark Clearinghouse is implemented with a whole large set of rules. Some of them came out of the STI effort. Some of them were made up as implementation because they have to follow a lot of rules. What we're talking about here is policy is a lowercase policy. It's not a GNSO policy, but it's someone has to set the rules, and the someone is ICANN, and we haven't. Now, the English language term policy fits. Maybe we need to adopt a new one of rule set or something so we don't get into the bind of it being a policy that has to go through a certain process to set. But right now we're missing rule sets that are relevant in the IDN world and in a number of other worlds. So.
Thank you. So Edmund, are you on
this? On this topic.
Okay.
Specifically on this topic.
Great.
I think Jonathan raised a good point, but Alan really stole part of my approach, and I think I'll use policy implementation to make the distinguishing or rule set. In terms of GNSO policy, we already have policies. Rahm chaired the IDN working group that achieved strong agreement on implementing IDN variants at the TLD, and also had strong agreement on actually 4.1.4 and 4.1.5. I'm reading it from it. So clear indication that IDN variants could be one application could have multiple strings. That is a policy that's already in place. So we're talking about implementation in terms of the IDN variant delegation and those kind of things. There is also limit variant confusion and collision on the second level registration. So it does, the policy is pretty, and at least in my mind is pretty clear. Now is really about this policy, how it translates into implementation, including the fees, including, how it's actually implemented at various areas. And I'd like to end with going back to my question, because one of a critical thing on both the multiple strings for one GTLD and also limit variant confusion and collision, the user experience report makes a particular recommendation that I just need a clarification that is not in conflict with the good user experience that CDNC has provided in terms of the .China launch and the preferred variant approach. I'm a little bit worried that it is in compliant with that, but I'm sure it isn't. So I just want a clarification on that. And then we go back to how we implement this, because in terms of GNSO policy, at least in my point of view, it's there. We spent a lot of time in the IDN working group talking about this issue, and the details of the rule sets are not there yet, but the policy I believe is there.
Thanks, Edmund, for the clarification. Jonathan, you have a...
I'm with you, Edmund, and I think Alan expressed it very eloquently. So my concern was that this would get boosted up and say we have inadequate policy and therefore we need to do more policy work. That was why I was attempting to draw that line, because Hong and others had been referring to this as policy, and I just wanted to make sure that it was sitting firmly in the area of use case execution within the realms of what we need to be doing.
Yeah, but
already.
I guess my interpretation for Holmes, what's she trying to inform or advise us is are actually those rule sets.
Correct.
Within those implementations.
Yes, some overarching rule sets
correct.
Are required, which is perfectly English. In English terms, it's perfectly correct to describe as policy, as Alan says. I was just worried that it would get would be an excuse to not resolve it. I'm with you on that. And Jay Scott's point is good, that the existing implementation of, for example, variants like I think you used the example of M&M. That capacity to deal with those would I think deal with simplified versus traditional, for example, quite readily if they are in essence representations of the same mark.
We're going to stop with Jeff and perhaps to go back on the. Oh, sorry, Jeff. Which one go first? Jeff.
Well, we are now fortunate to have all of the IDN initial evaluations out. Well, most. I think there's a few that still are in initial evaluation, and I don't know to what extent we could do this, but it would be interesting to collect a study in the aggregate of how the different registries proposed handling it, because that was a very specific question in there. And I would suspect that most of the registries have probably, although this is just a guess, have probably proposed something that's very similar, I would think, or hope, since there have been other registries that have launched IDNs, and we've all, you know, between Neustar, Afilias, VeriSign, we've all launched IDNs in the past at the second level. But I don't know to what extent we can get that information, at least in the aggregate, of what the different registries have proposed, and then to see if we actually do have a problem. I mean, it may turn out that everybody's proposed the same thing and we have a de facto policy there because everyone's planning on doing it the same way. Or it could turn out that we have 15 different registry operators that have proposed 15 different ways. So we're presupposing a problem that may or may not exist, but we do have the data if we can access it.
Jeff, actually, I'd like to respond on that quickly, is that it is absolutely the right way to think of that, but sometimes you throw questions to, for example, people with commercial interests. The data you'll be collecting may or may not, I mean, represent truly the best practice or for the best interest for the registrar or the user, simply because this is my interpretation and my understanding in this subject. It's that it's pretty much a registry or the TOD applicant driven type of. The subject. So from time to time, we need to learn from, the quote-unquote community experiences. I mean, otherwise, when you throw this question out to number of applicants there, I'm pretty much sure that they will tell you, hey, just get us the stream. That's it. We'll just walk away.
Well, I understand. I'm just saying we have the data now, and we could spend hours and days and weeks and months hypothesizing how people could have proposed doing it when the data is there. I don't know if we're allowed to access it or how we would do that, but the data is there. It's all there.
Actually, that was incorporated. Some part of the data was actually incorporated in the user experience report. So, okay, then Milton, then.
Just kind of as a closing comment, I think one of the assumptions and needs to be questioned that permeates a lot of this discussion is the idea that any and all problems associated with trademark infringement through domain names can be engineered out of existence by adopting a particular policy with respect to variants. And I just want to say, number one, that's false. There will be problems. And it's odd that so many lawyers in the room don't believe in legal processes as being sufficient, or even our own UDRP. I was struck by what Hong said, that if somebody in Hong Kong submitted a variant version of the same trademark, it would never have been trademarked. That was not a technical process. That was somebody looking at it and saying, that's confusingly similar. And there would be legal remedies. There would be UDRP remedies under that. And so the idea that we're somehow going to define an algorithm or a technical mechanism that's going to stop every form of trademark infringement, I think that's not true. I don't think that's desirable. I think that is too constraining. And there are all kinds of ways of ex post fixing these problems that we have to pay attention to. It's, none of them are all going to be stopped ex ante. And I've learned from studying regulation for 30 years that when you try to anticipate every possible problem that could ever occur, and then try to stop it from happening ex ante, you usually end up with stifling forms of regulation. And indeed, the most sure way to make sure that no trademark infringement problems ever happen in a domain name system is to, of course, not have any domain names. So I leave you with that thought.
Thank you. Milton, I'd like to stop here for this particular topic. The takeaway that I have is, surprisingly, that we designed this particular discussion. It was aiming for to kind of initiate a discussion on the contractual issue for the variant delegation, but based on the discussion, we derive an emerging topic which is another implementation issues on the trademark clearinghouse, which we all know that it's been discussed, but I think maybe it's a good way to continue to do this. Several members here in the community to continue to address this issue. Potentially, I would suggest that we have a TMCH specific session next week. We should go there and to get our voices heard. Let me stop by saying that for the timeline issues on, in particular, Edmund emphasized on the variant delegation, I think this meeting it is left unresolved. I spoke to a number of people individually. They really hope to see kind of an expeditious ways of the resolution for the variant TOD delegation. So let me stop here and let us stop on this topic and move on to the next one, which is the IRD. I would like maybe Steve or Francisco, Steve, to have an update.
No. Thank you, Cheng. We have some slides here. So Julie and I will provide a quick update on the final issues report on translation and transliteration of contact information. And then we'll open up for discussion. So this is a quick one-slide summary of what this issue is about. It's about addressing several issues associated with the translation and transliteration of the contact information. This was a GNSO Council motion on 17th of October. So a bit of background, this issue comes out of the GNSO and ASEC IRD working group, where the working group defines a set of standards on what data elements to be internationalized and how they are the standards. And the working group could not reach consensus on this issue and because there's various policy issues associated and recommend the issues report. So the staff produced a preliminary issues report. We've taken the public comment and we send the final issue report to the GNSO Council. In the report, the staff recommend initiating the PDP, but defer the work until the GTLD Directory Service Expert Working Group complete its work. In the meantime, not to cause further delay to initiate a study on the commercial feasibility of translation and transliteration systems for contact names, organizations, and postal addresses. So here's an example of what we're talking here since we're meeting in China. So here we have three columns here. On the left column, we have the organization and the address in Chinese. And this is a recommendation of the IRD working group that these addresses can and should be localized. That means registrant should be able to submit these localized address. Then the question is, should there be translation or transliteration of that same information in WHOIS, right? So as you can see, I show two examples. CINIC is 中国互联网络信息中心. It can be translated as the China Internet Network Information Center. And the transliteration, which is really a transcription for the Chinese script, is 中国互联网络信息中心. So there are very similar for address. Obviously, there are a set of policy issues here. You know, one is, you know, what's the utility of doing this? Whether, you know, this there's the feasibility issue, and who will do this, right? Is it, you know, registrant? Is it registrars? Is it registries? All of those are policy related issues that the working group, you know, the issues report touches upon. The rationale for initiating the PDP, but wait for the GTLD directory service expert working group completes, is because there are so many activities on WHOIS, and we don't want these activities to be on colliding course and have, you know, ad hoc solutions where, you know, the overall issue is being rethink. So that's our recommendation. When staff send the final issue report to the council, we also propose a motion that is roughly, you know, what we describe: initiate the PDP, but wait for the next step, for example, the formation of a drafting team until the expert working group completes its work. Request the staff to provide an update at the end of May with regard to the status of the expert working group to determine the next steps. Commence the study you know, on the commercial feasibility of translation or transliteration systems so that, you know, those studies and fact finding can be done earlier, and so when we have all the information together to deliberate this policy issue. So that's a quick update on this issue. Back to you, Ching.
Thank you, Steve. I have a quick comment and also the thoughts on this. Thanks for the final report, and I myself have no problems to have this motion, but we haven't been able to make a timely decision, I mean, within our stakeholder groups or others, simply because I have sent around a question. I'm indicating that this motion is asking the council to initiate a PDP, and then we would just start the process of waiting for the outcome for the EWG, the expert working group. So as mentioned again, I have no problem to initiate a PDP and start to ask the staff and also others to start to work on those important items. But I myself having a little bit trouble on having a PDP, and then we start to wait, and potentially the staff have mentioned that it could we will have to wait for a few months or maybe longer. So so I guess we received the report, but I think that we need to have some workaround solutions and some wisdom in order to deal with that type of the situation here like this. So,
thank you.
Yes, Joy.
Yes, just one comment. Given the discussion the council had earlier today, that the expert working group recommendations would be an input into our own consideration of a number of issues. I'm not sure why we would want to wait for that working group to send us its recommendations. Presumably they could at any point be taken into account should they be available, you know, in the relevant time frame. So that's my only comment there.
That's Edmund.
Thank you, Ching. Edmund here. So Two questions, actually. One on bringing us back to the variant discussion, because the IRD spent a little bit of time deliberating on the issue of IDM variants and how that would or should show up in the in IRD. So I was wondering, I didn't see a lot of or any study on that in the issues report, whether that's planned or not, or where are we going? And the second part of the question is more imminent, because we also talked about the IANA Whois, which is the root database Whois, and with the new IDN GTLDs come in play, how you envision, you know, IRD playing a role in that, in that aspect, and including IDN variants as well, because the current implementation for IDN ccTLDs, not only is it somewhat ad hoc, it's also it's also less than desirable, as I understand. So,
thank you, Edmund. Milton.
Yeah, just a question for Steve. You mentioned the exploration of the commercial feasibility of a translation transliteration system, and I wonder what you mean by commercial. Do you mean that the system would be a profit-making enterprise, or do you mean you're talking more about economic feasibility or the costs of implementing it?
Mita, I think you're quite right. I think it's more about the economic feasibility and the cost. Obviously, you know, implementing this has a cost, and as a policy issue, that needs to be weighed against the benefit it provides. Sorry, I meant just for you. So regarding your question on variants, it is not explored in this issues report. In the IRD final issues report, there are some text on the expected behavior and requirements for variants. Those, I think, in the IATF, there's a working group working on the next generation registration data protocol, and those kind of recommendations has been communicated to them, so they're aware of and working on it, so that at least there will be solutions. So that. Don't know whether that will that answers your question. I forgot your second question, sorry.
The second question is on the IANA Whois, which is the root database, and are we expecting the same treatment as in the IDN ccTLD fast track, or how is that implementation going about?
So with respect to the IANA Whois, I think IANA revamped their Whois, I think, 2 years ago, that include a couple of new features, for example, to allow the display of U-label alongside of A-labels. As you mentioned earlier, I think it's right now, I think it's there's obvious needs for improvement, I think, all these requirements. And once the appropriate policy work is completed and those would necessarily to update the systems. Thanks.
Thank you, Steve. Oh, Edmund.
Sorry to belay the point. So are we expecting that it will be similar to the IDN ccTLD fast track as the imminent implementation, because we are implementing IDN TLDs very soon, like in the next few months, right? And we won't have all the policies and stuff in place or the new technologies in place yet. So I'm guessing it is. Just want a clarification on that. And actually, on Milton's point, one of the things I did want to raise again, in the original IRD, we not only talked about translation and transliteration in this form, we also talked a little bit about a possible ASCII-compatible representation that doesn't necessarily... you know, it is not necessarily a transliteration. It could be a, I don't know, like a Unicode code point string of the original, the address, for example. Rather than translation or transliteration, there's also a type of Romanization or ASCIIization, sorry, I don't know how to create that word, but an ASCII representation way so that, you know, certain processes can take place, like there are engines that compare, like law enforcement use it regularly to compare who is data, and you know, with IRD, it could become more challenging. But with an ASCII compatible representation, that could resolve some of the issues. So instead of just transliteration, shouldn't we also explore the commercial feasibility of just an ASCII representation, which I believe would be cheaper, but that being one of the part of the study as well. So the first one is, are we expecting the IDN CCD fast track type of implementation for the IANA WHOIS, and then the second part, the ASCII compatible representation?
So your second question about whether it's translation or transliteration, or there's a third category. I actually don't recall that. So if you could, send me an email on what those are, that'll be good. I do know that, for example, in some of the TLDs today, they operate instead of displaying, for example, the localized character, they display the Unicode code point. Which is in a way ASCII, but from the end user's perspective, giving you a set of Unicode code points is not going to be very useful. But I suspect that's not what you meant, but so I would like to learn more about that. Regarding your first question, I think the applicant guidebook specifies what is required in terms of requirements and obligations for WHOIS. And as you said, many of these IRD issues is in the process of being, ironed out, and it's not ready, it's not there yet. So in absence of new policy guidance, the recommendation is to state what the guidebook requires. Thanks.
Thank you, Steve. I think we should, for the time, Sheikh, we should close this session, and I would recommend that the councillors here and also for the stakeholder groups take this IRD issue back to your own stakeholder groups and have a discussion on whatever Monday or Tuesday, and potentially at the wrap up session for the GNSO, we should try to figure out a way forward. So thank you. Back to you, Jonathan.
Thanks very much, Ching and Steve and the other colleagues that have left. That was a pretty informative session and has certainly left us recognizing that there's a number of open issues. I did see that there were, I don't know if you noticed, there were some board members present who were listening particularly to the bulk of this session and keeping an eye on it. So it obviously has the attention at the right levels, both from us here and board members and others in the room. But it strikes me that there's a lot to do still, which is clearly on your mind. We need to change gear now and focus on some important meetings tomorrow. So maybe let's just stop the recording from the previous session, take a moment, but I think we need to get back on the case pretty quickly. You might want to stand up and stretch, yawn, do whatever you need to do.